this is not my favourite thing to do, I'd just like to say. My 12-year-old daughter told me to imagine you all in your underwear. Being a nurse, that doesn't do much for me at all, so I'll pass on that. So as you heard, my name is Heidi, and I am an intern here at Seeds. A little bit about me. At the moment, I love to play netball. I play competitively twice a week. I train once a week, and I also coach my daughter's team. I enjoy baking. I also enjoy eating cake. Thank goodness for netball, hey? from my past, I have lived in 16 houses and 4 states of Australia so far. And I come from a very large Dutch family. Dad's one of 6. Mum originally had 10 siblings. And I have more than 40 immediate cousins. If you start counting their spouses and their kids, we are well over 120 and counting. It's beautiful and it's crazy. And it's such a privilege to be part of a family that loves each other and genuinely cares about each other. I've got some pictures because I thought that would just help break it up a little bit. So I'm the youngest of 4 girls, and I was very, very blessed to grow up in a loving Christian home. I was 10 years old when our pastor at our local church shared a message aimed specifically at the kids in the room, and it really spoke to my heart and compelled me to make a decision to give my life to Jesus that day. I went out the front of our church, and I remember one of the dads there praying with me, and he's like, "Why are you crying?" And I'm like, "I don't know." In hindsight, I can see that it was God's Spirit moving in me already then, even at such a young age. It was a very conscious decision to choose Jesus, and I had never felt so close to him before. So looking back, I feel like God was preparing me then for the immense amount of change that was about to take place in my life. I was 11 when my oldest sister, Kim, got married to a lovely farmer called Fred. Sorry, just trying to manage all the pictures. That's me on your left with the beautiful permed hair. Bit horrific that my mother allowed 11-year-old me to get a spiral perm in 1989. But hey, that's life. So it was shortly after this that my parents felt called to sell the house and leave the suburban life for a life with Youth with a Mission, or YWAM as it's more widely known. So we left Victoria and moved to YWAM Canberra shortly after I turned 12. It is so easy to just rattle that off in a sentence, but it doesn't really portray the unrest that I felt at the time. And having a 12-year-old daughter now, it's kind of bringing it all back for me. So being almost 9 years older than me, my sister Kim was like my second mother. She helped me in the night if I was unwell. She did my hair for me. She was the one I went to if Mum was too busy doing something else. I was super excited to be her bridesmaid and see her get married, but I was not looking forward to not having her there in the house with us anymore. She and Fred, her husband, would be living 3 hours away in country Victoria. And on top of that was the big move interstate to Canberra. And that meant new home, new school, having to leave all my family friends behind. Not only Kim and Fred, but also my other sister Alison, who was also moving away with Kim and Fred because she was dating and later married Fred's brother Albert. Yes, my sister's married brothers. So that's another awesome early 90s picture. So needless to say, with the immense amount of change that was going on, I was pretty emotional and I cried myself to sleep most nights. But God gave me a really great love for music at that time. And I remember playing a kids' praise and worship tape. Yes, a tape in a tape recorder. Remember those? And just soaking it in every day. I also read the Picture Bible. And if you're a parent, get all over this. This is the Picture Bible. It's the Bible in comics. I think I read it about 8 times. I just loved it. And my favourite story in it was the story of Esther. Somehow the story of an orphan girl who wins a beauty contest and later risks her life to save her people touched the heart of little 12-year-old me. God showed me that he cared about every little detail of my life. And he had me in the palm of his hand in the middle of all that change. That's one of the things I love most about God. No personal problem is too small or insignificant for him. He is a loving father who cares deeply for us. So, going on with my story, we lived in YWAM Canberra for a year. That's a whole other story. I won't go right into that one. But then, due to numerous reasons, Mum and Dad felt called to go to Bible college so that Dad could study to be a minister. So we moved to Geelong in Victoria, and we lived there for 5 years. It was an awesome place. It's my second favourite place to live so far. If I had to move back to Victoria, that is where I'd be. We lived there for 5 years. In that 5 years, we moved house 3 times, and I went to 2 different schools. But I thrived. I loved it. I had great friends. I did really well academically. And because of our year with YWAM, Jen and I, my sister, we had a lot to do with King's Kids, which is the Kids and Teens Division of Ministry with YWAM. That's a couple of our, our outreaches. So we went to Queensland, Sydney, Mildura, Melbourne, and even performed in the Sydney Opera House, and we were on like the morning show. It was pretty cool. And we even went to the USA at one point. So after Dad completed Bible college at the end of 1995, that year I completed year 12, Mum completed her ministry course, Jen completed TAFE, and Dad completed ministry. It was a pretty full-on household. So at the end of that, he was called to go to Tasmania so he could complete his first year of church ministry there. By this stage, I was 18 years old. Jen was 20, so she had qualified as a childcare person, done her childcare TAFE course. And I had actually been accepted into nursing at Deakin University in Geelong. But we only had part-time jobs and nowhere to live, and so Jen and I decided to move to Tasmania with Mum and Dad. That's such a simple thing to say, but it doesn't even begin to describe the heartache of packing up and leaving family and friends again for a new life in a new state. So in 1996, when we moved, the only university in Tassie that offered the Bachelor of Nursing course was up in Launceston, and we had moved down to Blackmans Bay, just south of Hobart. So studying nursing in Tassie wasn't an option for me. I ended up taking a year off and working as a waitress in a cafe. It was a fun year in Tassie. I felt really carefree, having no homework, and I really enjoyed my job. But the longing to be a nurse was still there, and I knew that God had bigger plans for my life. Little did we know that at the end of that year, we would pack up and move again. This time, it was to South Australia. And again, it was for Dad's work in the church. Jen and I had grown really close with all the changes that we had been through. We weren't only sisters, we were each other's best friends. And this time, the move was really difficult for Jen, as she was in a serious relationship with a guy that she'd met at our church in Tassie. But Mum and Dad were keen to live back on the mainland in order to be closer to my older 2 sisters and their families. And although I loved Tassie and had made some really good friends, I also wanted to find a way to get into nursing and not just work as a waitress for my whole life. So just before we moved, I applied for and was accepted into nursing at Flinders University, which was an incredible answer to prayer for me. We were to live less than 10 minutes from the uni, so I could really see God fitting everything together perfectly. So as difficult as a decision as it was for Jen, she also decided that she needed to stay with us too, and we all made the move here to SA in January 1997, in the middle of a 10-day heatwave, and it was a rude shock after living in Victoria, Canberra, and Tasmania. So on the day we arrived at our new home in Seacombe Gardens, it was a scorching 42 degrees. Jen and I had no air conditioning in our little barina, and everything we owned was on the road with us. We actually caught up with our moving truck, because we got off the ship in the morning, caught up with our moving truck just Victoria side of Tailem Bend, and it was quite surreal to look out and see moving truck with all our stuff, Mum and Dad's car and our car, all our family, all our luggage, our 2 pets, everything was on the road right there, and I was like, wow, this is really real. But change at this point had become quite normal for me. It was crazy. So many mixed emotions about who we'd left behind, what was in the future. We had no idea what we were heading into, and there was both excitement and fear in that. So I have to throw one significant detail in this story right here. You see, in amongst all of this change and all of this moving, there was one very constant thing, and that was my parents' prayer. They prayed a lot. They prayed about everything. And as a kid and a teenager, there were times when I like totally rolled my eyes when they said, "We have to pray." I'm like, "Again?" You see, I prayed, but not like they prayed. But now that I'm the one who's 40, with the kids and the house and everything else, I can see the incredible importance of covering everything in prayer and claiming the promises of God over my and my children's lives. So my parents had been praying for husbands for all their four girls for many, many years, pretty much from the day we were born, specifically that we would meet and marry good, kind, loving, God-fearing Christian men. And at this stage, if it was a bit of a two down, two to go kind of scenario. But Jen had a boyfriend, like I mentioned before. Jen and Gaz had decided to make a go of a long-distance relationship between Tassie and South Australia. And it actually wasn't too long before Gaz followed us here and moved in with us for a while, which was a bit weird. But then Mark got a house and he moved in with him. Mum and Dad's prayers for Jen were answered pretty quickly the following year when Gaz proposed and Jen accepted, and they married in December 98. That should be. There it is. Our family keeps growing, like with each photo. It's quite cool. So going back to our move, didn't take too long to settle into life in South Australia. I started uni pretty quickly after we got here, and I developed some really great friendships with the small amount of youth that were in our new little church. I made one strong connection with a person in particular, and after 5 months of friendship, Mark and I started dating at the end of May in 97. In following my parents' example of prayer, while they prayed for their good Christian man, I prayed for one with nice teeth and who worked with his hands. So if you've seen Mark smile, he has a beautiful smile. And he's also a carpenter. Win-win. Woohoo. So the church that Dad was working in was very small and quite traditional. It was the Reformed Church, which has a Dutch background. He and Mum had huge plans for it and were keen to see it grow spiritually and in numbers, but unfortunately it wasn't to be, and the church actually closed at the end of 98. This affected us as a family in a massive way. We were all completely disillusioned, but we never let go of the fact that God had us all in the palm of his hand and he would bring good out of the situation. I once said to Dad that if the only good thing to come out of the whole move and everything with the church was for me to meet Mark, then that was worth it. So Mark finally proposed to me in May 1999. I waited a long time, 2 years, but anyway. We were married in December that year. I also finished my nursing degree less than a month before we got married. So I graduated in November, I got married in December, and I started full-time shift work at the Women's and Children's Hospital in January. Now, I'm one that's used to change, but this one was pretty full-on. I struggled. It was massive. I found shift work really difficult. I found the transition from single uni student, or, you know, not married uni student, to really struggled. I often felt like at work that I was in over my head. And it's actually quite a challenge to look after sick babies when you are trying to function on only minimal sleep between a late early. But I survived, and I didn't kill anybody, thank the Lord. But one of the biggest problems at this point was that my whole identity was in my job as a nurse. I had waited and then studied for years to get to this point, and I genuinely thought it was going to make me happy. It took me many years to accept and realise that what I do doesn't define me. It's who I am in Christ that defines me. So my joy was never going to come from my job or even from my husband or my family. It came from God. David said it really well in Psalm 16, verse 11. Oops, wrong one. How do I go back? there it is. He says, "You have made known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand." That's it, right there. The joy is in God. So I ended up working for almost 3 years in the hospital system before I got a job at the Red Cross Blood Service in the city and then later at their Southern Centre. I'm very, very good at finding a vein. I worked there full-time until Rachel, our daughter, was born, and then again part-time until Luke was born. And right there is a whole other story altogether. The last time I actually shared my testimony was all about having kids, and it was about 9 years ago. Time flies. You see, having babies wasn't as easy for us as it should have been. It took 10 years and 13 cycles of IVF for Mark and I to have our 3 kids. So we had decided early on in our marriage that we'd wait a few years before we had children. 2 years came and went, and we were busy building a house and working at our jobs, and Mark actually confessed to me that he wasn't ready to have kids. So we waited a bit longer. I had been an aunt from the age of 12, had worked in childcare through uni, then in pediatrics and in neonates. I was right up there with this thing. I was keen as mustard to have kids. So I finally talked Mark into the idea, and he gave in, and we started trying to have children. And 6 months came and went, and I still wasn't pregnant. Being a nurse, I knew there was something wrong. And long story short, we ended up being referred to a fertility specialist, and the test results showed that we were unable to have children naturally. There was actually a period of 9 weeks where we were unsure if we were even going to be able to have our own biological children. I think that was the scariest bit of the whole thing. And it was during this time from Psalm 113, verse 9, which says, "He gives childless couples a family. He gives them joy as the parents of children." Hallelujah. What an incredible promise. He also directed me to a book called God's Plan for Pregnancy. It had actually been released like a month before I was looking for any kind of resource in this area. And what it said in that book taught me an incredible amount about God's promises in His Word and how we can cling to them. I also, during that 9 weeks of not knowing, I was out shopping one day and I came across a t-shirt that I had to buy, which is this pic. As soon as I saw it, I knew I needed to give it to Mark, and it turned out to be quite nice teeth, yes. So when Mark and I sat in that fertility specialist's office 9 weeks later, waiting for the results from all the tests, all either of us could do was pray. I asked Mark later on what he was doing, because the doctor just sat there and just talked and talked and talked at us and wouldn't give us an actual answer. He just kept talking. And I said to Mark, "What were you doing?" And he goes, "Praying. I was just praying." And so was I. We were praying for a hope and a joy that would go beyond our circumstances and for a miracle. God had told me not to expect the worst in this situation so that I wouldn't be disappointed, but to be joyful in hope and to expect His best. The specialist said that we would need to do IVF, but we could have our own biological children. In saying that, it's still a tough pill to swallow when you're surrounded by a baby boom. At the time, it seemed like all of our friends and siblings were having children around us. And here we were being told, "No, you can't have children naturally. You're going to have to spend tens of thousands of dollars and go through countless medical procedures in order to conceive your child." It was beyond difficult, but we did get through. We had amazing people around us who prayed for us, supported us, and it was just God being there with us through them. Before and during that, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that it was going to work. God gave me a verse from Exodus 23 that says, "But you serve God and He'll bless your food and your water. I'll get rid of the sickness among you. There won't be any miscarriages nor barren women in your land. I'll make sure you live full and complete lives." And that was my promise from God in that moment, and I was clinging to it. Even when close family members, the nurses, the doctors, everyone spoke words of doubt, because apparently the first cycle never works. It never works first time. I refused to believe it, and I clung to God's promise. I chose to trust. I chose to hold on to the promise that God had given me for that time. I would not lose this baby. The cycle was going to work in December 2005. my cute little baby, because after that they were enormous. She was born the day after our 6th wedding anniversary. So unfortunately it wasn't quite so straightforward getting Lukey. It took 3 long years, 9 cycles of IVF, and a miscarriage before Luke finally arrived. It was an unbelievably challenging time of our lives. And when I miscarried, it was one of the darkest times of my life. To finally get a positive result after you've put in so much effort was beyond devastating. And I questioned God. I completely doubted his love for me at that time. And I even went through a time where I just could not pray at all. I was struggling so much. And it was in the midst of this that someone very, very close to me said, "Oh, God must love you so much to let you go through this." And instantly, my spirit within me said, "No, no, God didn't let me go through this. This isn't his perfect plan for us. He is a good God. He's a loving father who only gives good gifts to his children. He's not a nasty being that throws horrible life experiences at us to see how we go." The sad truth is that sin is in the world and the devil has free reign down here. And while that's happening, bad things are going to happen. That's a given. It's often how we react and what God does with these situations that are the witness to his goodness. I once heard Bill Johnson say that God is so good at making good things out of bad situations that he gets blamed for the bad in the first place. But he's never the author of the bad in our lives. It's the devil that does that. But if we have faith and trust in God, he will make everything good in his time. We don't need to know all the answers. And Mark and I did not have all the answers during this time. We just knew that we needed to trust in God. And the waiting wasn't easy, but God was there in the midst of it. When people said, "Oh, you should just be content with having one baby, at least you have her," I would cling to the verse, again from Psalm 113, that says that I would be a joyful mother of children, plural, not a joyful mother of one child. I held on to that, and eventually we were blessed with a son, Lukey. It's been a challenge from the moment he was conceived. He was born in April 2010. It was messy when he was born. There's no good newborn photos of my son. Going on, it took another 2 cycles of IVF after Luke, and we were blessed with our beautiful baby girl, Claire. There she is. And for me, this picture right here reflects how awesome our Creator God is. The picture on your left is of Claire on the day of transfer, 5 days after conception. She's about 250 cells there, and she's approximately 0.15 of a millimetre in size. The picture on the right is Claire exactly 1 year later, just under 3 months of age. That is phenomenal growth and development in 12 months, and is just blown together like that. When Claire was a toddler, we did one more frozen cycle, but the embryos didn't survive, and we decided to call it a day on having more babies. That's not to say I don't believe in miracles. At the very start of this whole thing, I said to Mark, "I bet you we go through all of this stuff, and then I'll fall pregnant naturally when I'm 40 and we're finished having kids." I'm 40, I'm not pregnant. I know God has a sense of humour. But we're okay for now. We are very content, very happy. We also don't like to take ourselves too seriously. So God has taught me so many things over my life, but the biggest lesson of all is that he is a good father. He loves us. He's never the author of the bad in our lives, but he will always work it together for good, and he will use our stories as a witness to others, to further his kingdom and to draw people to himself. I am amazed at his goodness to me through my life, through all the change and all the heartache and the joy and the pain, everything. He was and is always there. He's never left me, never forsaken me. One of my most favourite songs at the moment, I'm still into music very much, so it's called Highs and Lows. It's from the new Hillsong CD. The lyrics are spot on. They say, highs and lows, or should I fall? Even so, Lord, your mercy is an even flow. You're too good to let me go. Highs and lows in the rhythms of your grace, I know. Should I rise or should I fall? You are faithful through it all, and you're too good to let me go. So I want to encourage you tonight, no matter what you're going through, whether you're cruising through life and everything's going well, or if you're in the midst of a really tough time and life is incredibly challenging, know that God is there in the midst of it. He's not throwing challenges at you to test you, but he is there to help you through. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He loves, heals, forgives, helps, guides, leads, and comforts. His Spirit gives a joy and a peace that will go beyond your circumstances. And you can claim this truth over your life. Take the promises of God and speak them out day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute if you need to. By simply speaking out these truths, we can be transformed by the renewing of our minds, as it says in Romans 12:2, because faith comes from hearing. Words are so incredibly powerful and can change atmospheres and change lives. So thank you so much for listening to me. I hope my story has encouraged you in some way.